So when I was asked to read here, I was really excited. It's a labor-themed reading, and I had some really great childbirth stories to share. And so I wrote an essay, and then, you know, we're talking about work instead, so, which childbirth is work, you know, but so instead of reading my new essay, The Accidental Episiotomy, we are going to read something else instead. So. It's horrible. I know. This is called Cash for Gold. The owner of the collectibles shop a few doors down came into the Cash for Gold office and asked if anybody had tried to sell me a silver trumpet. I was robbed last night, he said. Ain't the first time. The Cash for Gold office where I worked was actually a single room with a large wooden desk, a wickless Yankee candle, and a couple of chairs lining the wood-paneled walls. It was in a run-down strip mall on Oakland Avenue, Indiana, PA. Out in the parking lot, there was a yellow sandwich board sign with two smiley face balloons anchored to it. It read, Cash for Gold. The rest of Oakland Avenue was mostly row houses filled with tenants who would stop to quiz me about the price of gold and silver and ask if I took coins or crucifix necklaces. They never had much gold or silver to sell. The silver trumpet, the collectibles owner's shop said, was missing this morning when he took inventory. I'd been at work for 2 hours already, and though people had stopped to hawk gold charms and earrings, 10-carat class rings, wedding rings, and bangle bracelets, I could say with certainty a silver trumpet did not pass through. I told the collectible shop owner this. There are a lot of drug addicts around here. Heroin's a big problem. That and prescriptions, the collectibles owner said. Not to say nothing bad about people who use drugs, but they will steal. They will do anything they have to. I only did Cash for Gold on weekends, when my neighbor asked me. He was the real Cash for Gold guy, buying and selling and melting every day. I had a full-time job. The one I got out of college after I quit the novelty store. But sometimes that wasn't enough, so I did this for extra money. I thought about getting robbed all the time. I thought about getting shot. I thought about my wife and son. There was $6,000 in the desk drawer. There were no security cameras, no alarm system, no guns in this place, just me and a dull penknife in my pocket. I was not certain a penknife could kill a drug addict. The collectibles shop owner said, I'm a big believer in karma. He removed his hat, revealing a shaved head. He rubbed the stubble on his cheeks and chin. He had large eyes that seemed to fill with water when he spoke and recede when he listened, like an ocean tide. He said, I don't even want the money or the trumpet. I just want someone to pay. He said, I'm not even worried about it. They'll get theirs. He was just a small business owner in an economically deficient western PA town. Someone broke into his shop and stole his silver trumpet. He felt he deserved karma. Shit, we all deserve a little karma, but he seemed to be talking about justice, retribution. If he wanted vengeance and called it karma, okay. But karma, real karma, didn't work like that. Karma was like an investment with the universe. Karma dictated that since I had never robbed or killed anybody, nobody should rob or kill me. Or maybe that was a beatitude. I wasn't sure. I just wanted to sit in this office, pay people for their gold on behalf of my neighbor, and walk out of here with a couple $100s. Easy, under-the-table, weekend work that would help me help keep my son happy with toys and books and clothes and food. It should be that simple, yet there was a real sense of peril that weighed on me. I didn't like the desolation this plaza on the side of the road on High Indiana, PA. Oh man, I fucked that up, sorry. I didn't like the desolation of this plaza on the side of the highway in Indiana. For each piece of jewelry I paid for, there was a story behind it. Most of these stories were sad, stories about divorces and death, stories of lost faith and deception, stories that were stolen from a mother's jewelry box or the local hospice, stories I was willing to sit in a swivel chair and nod and smile and pay for, stories that all end at a refinery where they are melted down and molded into something else entirely. What would karma have to say about that? They will do anything they have to do, the collectibles guy had warned me. The rest of the day I watched Oakland Avenue traffic and waited for death. Which vehicle would it be? Which one would skid into one of the three parking spaces in front of the office and pop its doors open like the prophetic wings of a locust and release a drug addict? Then another, and another. Christ, another. I imagined them, these drug addicts, who would spill from the car like clowns from a Volkswagen. For some reason, they wore white makeup over their deep-set eyes and dead faces. The fantasy became so intense I had to lock the single glass door, hang the sign that I was out for lunch, and stow away in the bathroom. Inside the bathroom, I smoked pot as I pissed and focused on not letting hot ash fall onto my penis. Later, I unlocked the glass door, took the sign down, and sat in the faux leather swivel chair. I pulled the penknife from my pocket and began opening and closing the blade. It was little more than a sharpened fingernail file. This was not Excalibur. But I did decide right then that that would be the penknife's name. I liked the idea, all the absurd power of folklore and magic to save me. Plus, the pot helped. I thought, in a moment of self-defense, I could grab a person's wrist, pull him prostrate across the wooden desk, and stab him in the neck and face maybe four or five times with my worthless penknife before he could get back up. I practiced four downward stabs into the top of the desk. Excalibur barely scratched the surface. But the skin around the back of the neck seemed softer and full of arteries, nice and veiny, like puncturing an apple with a paring knife, the blade butting up against the core. I didn't want to do that, but I envisioned it. I saw it happen from different angles. I knew if I stabbed a person once, I could stab them twice. Later, after the pot wore off, I made a robbery contingency plan while looking out the office window at people in the ice cream shop across the street. My plan was this. If anybody, drug addict or otherwise, came into this office and demanded money, I would give it to them. I would say, "Hey, this isn't my money. You can have it." I would say, "I hope you get away. Seriously, good luck." I would say, "I have a son and I want to see him grow up." If somebody came through the glass door, put a gun to my head and demanded money, I would produce the cash and mutter, "I think I'm going to pass out now." I would close my eyes and collapse behind the desk, a forced fainting. Who knows, maybe karma will come into play. Maybe the person will just grab the money and leave me passed out behind the desk. I would. I sat in the swivel chair and watched the highway, the people with their ice cream across the street. I watched the sky cloud over and darken. It drizzled. Then the sun came out. A car parked in front of the Cash for Gold office. I held Excalibur in one hand and my phone in the other. An old couple walked in and filled the two seats at the desk. I sat on the other side and smiled. I hid the penknife behind the desk and tried to fold the blade back into its slot with one hand. The woman set a clouded glass vial on the desk. Inside were a few gold-capped teeth. Gold-capped teeth were 16 carat, and we bought them. I tilted the vial and dumped the teeth onto the desk between us. I usually take the teeth back to my neighbor, and he lets his twin 6-year-old boys take hammers to them, smash them to dust. The boys walk around shirtless, gold necklaces around their necks, hammers in hand, asking for teeth whenever I stop by after a day's work. The woman was dressed like a gypsy, dangling earrings, loose, faded clothes, a gaudy opal charm around her neck. But although she'd come in with her hunchbacked husband, she did not have a Romanian accent. She spoke English, Yinzer English, the kind we speak in Western PA, my native tongue. She brushed a curly tuft of gray hair from her brow. "These belong to some of my dead aunts and uncles," she said of the teeth. "You don't pay more for antiques, huh?" Then she cackled, not quite like a gypsy, but more like a lifelong non-filter smoker. I told her we could take the teeth. She said, "Good, my aunts and uncles don't need them anymore, and none of them fit me anyway." The woman picked up the largest tooth, four dirty white roots reaching from the gold cap like tentacles, and held it up to her own mouth, demonstrating how it would not fit. She grunted and acted as if she were wedging a jigsaw piece into an incompatible puzzle. She said, "See, won't fit." She cackled again and put the tooth down. Her husband sat there, comatose, focused on my hands. I didn't think it was funny, but I laughed. She liked that I laughed. Her husband didn't laugh. He watched my hands, illuminated by the spotlight magnifying glass, handle the teeth with the smallest amount of contact. I operated with the tips of my fingertips, lifting one tooth at a time, setting it on the digital scale. I thought of the hand sanitizer and its convenient push-pump bottle right next to my pipe in the bathroom. The husband remained vigilant. He watched me lift the largest tooth, the one his wife had used as a prop earlier, and place it on the scale. The tooth weighed 3.1 pennyweights. I had to deduct 2 pennyweights on account of the brown antique tooth inside. I thought my boss's twin boys would enjoy smashing these teeth. I could see them bringing down their rubber-handled hammers, sending shards in all directions, laughing like children do because they can't see what I saw as I handled these teeth, mortality and death and halitosis. The woman and her husband were waiting for me to name a price. The woman was smiling, hopeful. Her own teeth were deteriorating. Her husband had finally taken his eyes off my hands and silently stared at my mouth, which was moving but not really saying much. I could have said $10 each and they would have taken it. They had no intentions of bringing these teeth back. I gave them $105 for the 4 teeth. The gold was certainly worth that, if not more. They thanked me several times. I didn't have another customer the rest of the day. The sky was overcast for a while. It smelled like rain, but rain didn't come. Neither did the drug addicts, no silver trumpet either. When my shift was over, I stuffed a baggie filled with silver, 4 baggies of gold separated by carat, and the vial of gold-capped teeth in the glove compartment, and the $4,000 in cash under the passenger seat. I merged onto Route 422 toward Katanning, toward home, as the rain finally arrived in large drops exploding on my windshield like useless bullets. I lit my quitting joint and thought, maybe I was bulletproof today. I turned up the radio, hoping I wouldn't get pulled over with all this explaining to do. Thanks.